Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. What I love about Shopify is basically how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. I know we use Shopify here at Betches, and honestly, anyone with any kind of business could really benefit from Shopify. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/betches, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/betches now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/betches.
Hey guys, Sarah here. We thought that with the documentary American Nightmare on Netflix trending, making waves, everybody's talking about this story. So we wanted to resurface an interview that we did with Denise and Aaron about their story. So give it a listen. Welcome back. We are back with Denise Huskins and Aaron Quinn, authors of Victim F, From Crime Victims to Suspects to Survivors. I mean, we're super excited to talk to you guys today. And we, you know, just want to talk to you about the book, obviously, and the story and everything that went into it. First, I feel like we'll start off a little light. What was it like to write a book with your spouse?
Oh, it was actually a really interesting and fun experience at times. It was nice to be able to kind of have your creative outlet, go through your own emotional roller coaster and then share it with your partner and have them give not necessarily critique, but you know, their opinion of where maybe you can expand on, or even just positive feedback to let you know that you're going in the right direction.
Yeah, I think importantly too is like, I mean, we probably spent, it took us about, I don't know, 9 months to write the book, but probably 2 years to edit, more or less, because we kept on adding and trying to make it as compelling as possible. But I mean, some chapters, I must have, I think one chapter I rewrote maybe 15 times. But then to read out loud and to have Denise go like, yeah, that's it. That's the emotion that, or that sentence captures the emotion or captures that moment really well. It's pretty invaluable to have that resource, and you know, have a person who knows it as well as we know it, who's lived it.
Yeah, and I mean, we obviously love and adore each other, but it was another experience of just being in awe of each other, you know, just to see his strength and creativity and being able to articulate the things that he's gone through and vice versa. So it was a really special experience.
I love that. And there's so much, because obviously you guys have been through so much. What was the first discussion where you two felt like we want to tell our story and like kind of own your story? Because obviously a lot of outlets reported it, but from both of you, was there a lot of, were you pushing back before writing the book, or did you feel like we need to get this out from our POV?
I think it was pretty early on that we would have hoped to write a book. You know, it was a interesting experience in that it was so publicized that when we started just kind of reaching out to some people saying, do you think this could be a book? And we got a lot of people saying, absolutely not.
No, what? Really? Why?
They said, no one's going to be interested. You know, like what happened to you was awful, but no one's going to want to buy or read a book about it. Or it's already been covered too much by the media that, you know, people are going to feel like they already know the story. And we're like, well, there's so much more that the media just cannot or refuses to to really dive into. So it was a long battle to find the right people to work with. And I mean, we were so fortunate to find the co-author we did and the publishers that we did that actually really supported us in our vision for the book. And we really wanted it to be told from the victim's perspective, because often in true crime, it's more focused around the perpetrator or, you know, the hero detective or law enforcement, which, or a journalist, you know, who covered it a little, you know, a little bit removed and outside looking in. And we've already had a lot of outsiders telling our story. So it felt necessary to tell it from our perspective.
And do you mind elaborating just on what kind of, or maybe if there's one standout or a few things that you felt the media, when you said they chose to ignore or chose not to cover, could you elaborate on what kind of, what was the recurring motif you felt being left out that you were like, why? Why are you guys not discussing this?
Well, initially when it was called a hoax, there was the emails from the kidnappers that gave ample evidence and talked about crimes that were reported that actually happened, and not, it didn't seem like any investigators actually went, looked into those crimes and ignored basically our whole past history. So there was, you know, we have doctorate degrees. We worked really hard to become physical therapists. We worked at a well-renowned rehab center with some of the most difficult patients. People had suffered strokes or brain injuries, spinal cord injuries, and none of that seemed to matter to the media. It was just kind of like, well, they're physical therapists. So that was a very frustrating on our standpoint, because our reputations were shattered, and that wasn't a question to go like, why would two physical therapists with in their 30s try to get, quote, their 15 minutes of fame? For what? You know, like, we would have been trying to do that a long time ago. And there's, you know, there's reality TV, there's YouTube, there's many other ways to get popular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On The Bachelor.
Yeah, exactly. Then there's, I think even after the fact, it was a lot of focus on one of the perpetrators, Mueller. They went, well, what happened to this guy? He went to Harvard. Like, this is, and it is a tragedy. This, what this man's life has turned into is a tragedy, but there was a lot of focus on him, not necessarily to focus on the victims, as, and that's part of then like why we wanted to write from our standpoint. And, you know, Nikki Egan, our co-author, really helped us amplify our voices and made sure that it was a lot of us actually writing with her, helping edit and asking us more questions and really honing our story so that you see the our perspective more or less.
I feel like I have to ask this, and I'm sorry in advance, but had you guys like seen or read Gone Girl before the media declared this the next Gone Girl?
I had read the book and saw the movie. So I don't necessarily blame the media so much for labeling, because it gets clicks, right? It's the police officers who use that as their determining factor for a crime instead of actual evidence. When you have FBI agents and detectives going like, well, it sounds like the movie Gone Girl, that's pretty low level decision making. And they're the ones who were telling the media it sounds like Gone Girl. So
yeah, and I had never read the book or seen the movie, and so for me to have apparently tried to replicate something that I knew nothing about was pretty just maddening. And then two, going through everything I did with law enforcement and them not believing me and the way that the rapes occurred and how, and just how everything was set up to where I was defenseless and I didn't fight back. I didn't make the situation more violent. And that was used against me, as you know, I'm getting my rape test and thinking, God, I wish I would have fought back. So there would be more obvious injuries. So maybe then they would believe me. Of course, you know, I finally watched the movie about 9 months after, and I see how she like hit herself in the face with a hammer and like gave herself internal injuries to help, complement her lie. And so I just realized it didn't matter what happened, if I was more beaten or not, or if I was more hysterical or not. They would have just used any excuse to not believe me.
I mean, I feel it's an overarching heartbreaking motif that happens to so many rape victims too, where it's like, how should a victim who's going to a hospital situation be having to self-doubt or question themselves that they weren't a proper victim when there's no way to be a proper victim? It's how do you stop them from becoming a victim, or how do you help them at that point? So that is just, I hate that you both experienced that in different levels. And can you, I'm sure it's in the book, can you both walk through, because you both had situations where you went to the police looking for help and looking for clarity and answers, and the situation just got completely turned on both of you.
Yeah, in my case, pretty much right when I went to the police, they slow played the idea because they didn't believe me, but they for hours acted as if they did. And that's not uncommon. What was disturbing is when after my 18 hours of interrogation, and later on, I started researching police interrogation techniques and found out this isn't what happened to me wasn't unique. This is actually how they're trained. And what was unique in my scenario is after 18 hours, I didn't falsely confess, because many people do, because it's basically psychological torture. It actually came from police used to be able to beat people, and then they couldn't physically hurt them. So then they developed how can you psychologically pressure people. And that is one of the most disturbing things about it. In my scenario, I know Denise is in serious danger, and I'm trying to convince the police to actually investigate. That's part the main reason why I endured so many hours. But they can choose what they do, and that's and they end up doing the same thing to Denise, is that you talk to them and they can choose, they decide what's evidence, they decide what they believe. And once they have that confirmation bias and tunnel vision, it's a very, very difficult thing to alter. Actually, the only reason why it got altered was a different department did their job and caught him. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking to you. We wouldn't have a book. Our lives would still be destroyed, and it took another family going through a tragedy for that.
Yeah. And for me, I was convinced for those 2 days that I would be killed. And so, I mean, moment to moment was just trying to figure out how to live and survive, being in the defenseless position I was in. And it never occurred to me in those 2 days that if I did survive, I wouldn't be believed. And then what do I do, and how do I handle that? And especially considering how the home invasion occurred and everything happened and the arrogance of my captor saying to me, you know, Aaron went to the police and the media are covering this, but it doesn't bother me. It'll be good PR for our group. I mean, he didn't seem to be afraid at all. And so I'm released and immediately met with not just doubt or disbelief, but attacks. It just made me feel like it never ended. Like this was just like next phase of this kidnapping. And it was just this much bigger thing that I would have no ability to protect myself from.
Because it's you thought that you were released to safety and freedom, but then it was your reputation that was taken, and it just everything that you guys had on the line. And I know that the police only just recently publicly apologized. That's correct, right?
Yeah.
To you all. And at that point, what was your thought when they reached out to you, kind of, I mean, truly 6 years later type of situation?
Well, they didn't reach out to us. They commented to 2020 and to People magazine, because they were putting out a story about our book release. We had reached out, our co-author had reached out to the police when we were doing our final edits for the book to say, do you have anything to say? And they didn't have a comment. So, I mean, it's, you know.
And quite honestly, the apology doesn't matter, because it's 6 years later, they're not actually apologizing to us. And if they were truly invested in not having this happen again, they would make policy and procedural changes. So the detective Mustard, who handled our case, actually botched our case, you know, in 2015, was given Officer of the Year. He's still the lead detective for that unit, even though he's lied on sworn statements in our case and he's lied on sworn statements in other cases. So he's unqualified to be in the position he's in, but they continue to keep him in a crucial part of their department. So if they're really actually concerned about apology, like, words don't matter, actions matter.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, I feel like, you know, we're in the midst just as a country of this like reckoning with law enforcement and how we approach it. And I wanted to know how this experience has shaped your views of the police and law enforcement.
I mean, I think it completely changed our whole worldview, including with law enforcement. And it's really a difficult place because Aaron's brother is an FBI agent, you know, and there's Misty who the detective who cracked the case and linked Mueller to our case and essentially saved our lives, you know, and our reputations, and the truth came out. And so there's so many great agents and detectives out there that you know, all of this is frustrating, and it seems like it'd be quite easy to do better. It doesn't make sense why it's so hard.
Yeah, the installation of insulating the poor officers who are causing the problems is probably the biggest issue. The lack of accountability. So in like our case, the police department has shown no ability to police themselves, and they're also tried to hide, like the former police chief of police for Vallejo told officers to delete text messages and emails during our civil case. And so they're trying to keep everything dark and in the shadows instead of actually holding themselves accountable and then improving, which would make, you know, the community safer. And to Denise's point, we know they're good officers. We know people who are dedicate their lives to protecting us, but the trade-off, you have to have the good officers overwhelm the poor officers, and they need to remove them. And that's unfortunate. They're not doing that.
And it's just so frustrating to have that happen. And you're just like, it's also this time so many years later and there is no change yet. And there's nothing being done to solve any of it. And then it's also, I'm like a public apology, not to the people. That's not an apology. That's just, they're just truly doing the same tactics, just in different ways of like covering things up, PR, hoaxing it all. And that's just, it's frustrating. And it's just like such a, like Sarah was saying, happens. It's the overarching theme in our country. But that's why it's good that people like you are bringing all the flaws that happen in the system to attention with the book. And I kind of want to go with that too. What is your, because obviously for you two, it was a release to write the book and get your word out. But is there a hope or maybe a feeling that you hope readers of the book will be able to take away from it? Or if you could have like a major takeaway from it for audience members, what do you think it could be or should be?
Yeah, I think probably there's multiple themes within it, but one would be slowing the rush to judgment. So that happened at the rush to judgment by law enforcement, the rush to judgment by the media, rush to judgment by the general public. It's easy now to read headlines and it's easy to get quick outrage, but you really don't know the whole story. You never know anyone's whole story. It's really important and actually a good sign to say, I don't know. I need to gather more information instead of sending out potentially hate, like Denise received horrible messages that people sought her out to put her in her place. And also on part of this is the facts of our case are quite extraordinary, but the way we dealt with trauma and the way we've processed through is universal. And so, at the core of it is actually a love story. Our love for each other, our support from our families and our friends, and we have a beautiful daughter now. And I think there's positivity within that. Those would be two of the major themes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we did go through a lot of trauma, but in a lot of ways we were lucky, because we had each other and our families and our careers and, the ability to find and pay for the attorneys that we had, to have Aaron's brother, who's an FBI agent, help guide us through a lot of these things that would just be, you're just lost. And so I think that's why it was really important for us to kind of shed light on some of these issues, because you have no way of knowing until you're in it. And then when you're in it, it's just almost impossible to get through. At least that's the way it feels sometimes. So I think if people can see what these issues are, maybe they'll pay attention and want to be a part of changing some of these things.
Yeah. Cause we spent over $140,000 on criminal defense attorneys, and we weren't even charged with a crime. So many people don't have the emotional support or the financial support to actually be able to do that. So I think we're, highly educated, upper middle class white people. They are unfortunately potentially doing this to more and more people. And there's opportunities for reform. There is a push to actually make, policing better. And hopefully people think about that and support that, because bad police work makes the public less safe.
I love that that's the mentality you have. And I also love, you guys are just such an inspiration in terms of your outlook, that you overcame something so intense, everyone's worst nightmare. And you, both of you just seem grateful to have each other, grateful for the love, the family you have, which is beautiful. And then you're using this to be like, having it to raise awareness is such a national crisis that is happening in our country overall about how to make our country safer and to make people either in your situation or dealing with just a bunch of other things that may not have the fortunate levels that you have feel a little bit safer too. And it's very commendable. It's very commendable from both of you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And also, I feel like you guys seem like such like a perfect couple too. I feel like you just are like so like sweet and fun. And I feel like over getting through a book together too, you guys can just kind of, you are ready for everything and anything too.
Yeah. I mean, I think getting through the kidnapping and the accusations by the police, I mean, they were trying to get us to turn on each other. I think there's a lot of opportunities that our relationship could have ended. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't easy. For both of us individually to go through PTSD, we have similar and then also different triggers. And it definitely came into our relationship, especially intimacy and with the rapes. I mean, it was a challenge. And I think what made it work was we never blamed each other and we never attacked each other about any of it. A lot of the difficulties was more of like our own personal insecurities. For me, like, am I a broken woman? And is he ever going to see me as a whole woman desirable again? Or am I just a victim? Is anyone going to see me more than just a victim? And so, going through therapy and talking through those things and Aaron feeling guilt about things. I feel guilt, you know? So, there was a lot of hurdles to go through, and we wanted to be really honest about that in the book. And so we shared some of that, just to show, I mean, it's really hard to get through trauma, but it's also, it's not impossible, even in moments when it does feel like there's just, this is rock bottom and I can't get out. So there is a light at the end of the tunnel. There is hope. And it's a lifelong journey to get through. And, we just did our best to try to channel that negative energy and try to turn it into something positive.
I love that.
Definitely. And we're so excited that you guys, we're glad you guys came on to discuss the book. We're also glad that you wrote the book. It's going to be, I think, really like informative for people to read.
It's an important book, because I feel like you said, from the victim's POV, when you were talking, I was like, for women or just rape survivors who have the guilt of even, like, you hear so much of them not even coming forward for so late because they're afraid of the repercussions of the judgment or the not being believed in. So having someone with the experience write this, help them, show them what they maybe could be feeling, or just to know that they're not alone, as simple as that. It's crucial. Writing and literature. So we're very thankful that you took the time to talk to us too today.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, we've definitely been inspired by other people speaking out. And so it's like, we're just trying to feed off of other people's strength and energy, and hopefully we can pay it forward to other people too. So.
Totally. Well, thank you guys so much. And can you just one more time remind the listeners the title of the book, where they can find it, everything like that?
Yeah, the title of the book is Victim F, From Crime Victims to Suspects to Survivors. And people can find more information about the book and us at victimf.com.
Great. Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you guys.
Not Another True Crime Podcast is produced by Jorge Morales Pico and Sean Kilby. Our hosts are Sarah Levine and Danny Murphy. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Sarah Levine. Be sure to follow at NATC Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send us your emails to natc@betches.com. Betches.